Okay, Parshat Chukat has got some very big famous things in it. Of course, the most famous thing is Parah Aduma, so we're not going to touch that. Second of all, there is something that we have talked about in the past, which is Moshe's sin, the rock, and all that. We're not going to touch that one either. And there is the whole war with Sihon and Og, that we've talked about in different contexts, not as part of Parshat Chukat, but the fact that that opens up the East Bank to us and the implications of that, we're not going to talk about that one either. The reality is Parsha Chukat is a very short Parsha, which is chock full. It's just great stuff. And one of the really fascinating pieces of it is something that we may touch on at the end, which is on the back page, depending on our time, which is this Shirat HaBe'er, this song that suddenly shows up when Bnei Yisrael come to a well, and they sing, and it's unclear what the song is about, and it's unclear why they're singing, and there's a really bizarre comment of one of the Rishonim that we're going to take a look at, but we're going to look at what is assuredly one of the overlooked pieces in Chukat, only because it gets lost in the spotlights shined on the other things that I just mentioned, which is this little skirmish. I don't know if you can call it more than a skirmish, between some Canaanite king and Bnei Yisrael. Right, and on the face of it, it seems to be a relatively mundane piece that should not raise any sort of issue for us. It's source one on the page. And this happens immediately after the death of Aharon. So Aharon dies. Moshe and Eleazar come down. Eleazar is decked out in Aharon's bigdei kehuna. And the next thing that we hear is Vayishma Hakna'ani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev. Now, who is this guy, first of all? So he's Hakna'ani, which tells us that he's some sort of a Canaanite leader. He's Melech Arad. Now, we know that Arad is on the West Bank. We know where Arad is. Arad, by the way, is not far from Tel Arad. In other words, modern-day Arad is very close to the ancient city of Arad, and it's one of the oldest cities that we have in existence. And it goes back to certainly before the period of Yitziat Mitzrayim, because when Bnei Yisrael come in the ill-fated scouting mission that we call the Meraglim, they come up through Arad, and they describe what happens there. So Hakna'ani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev. So this puts him firmly as a West Bank king. Kibal Yisrael Derech HaAtarim. What does he hear? He hears that Bnei Yisrael came via the road of the Atarim. Now, an Atar in Aramaic means a location. Matter of fact, in modern Hebrew, it's even used for a website, right? An Atar. But it's a site or a location. Derech HaAtarim, what is that? Unclear, and it's not a road that we've heard of otherwise. We have other roads that we're familiar with. Derech Mar Shemesh, Derech Eretz Plishtim, Derech HaMelech. We have other roads that we're familiar with. We've never heard of this road before, Derech HaTarim. But Bnei Yisrael are coming there. Vayilachem b'Yisrael vayish menu shevi. And for some reason, they go to war against us, and they take some captives. I have the famous Midrash that was only one captive, shevi, but simple shot is they take some captives. So where is this war happening? When is this, meaning when in the context of travels is this war happening? And why do they go to war against us? So the simplest read of it is they go to war against us because we're coming through their territory, because that's a lot of what happens in Chukat. Either in the case of Edom, we go around because God says you can't go to war against them, or in the case of Sihon and Og, when we're told you can go to war against them, we try to go through, they come out, and we fight them, and we go through. So it sounds like we're going through their territory. If we're going through the territory, that means we're already in the West Bank. Now, that's a little strange, because we thought that after the decree of the 38 years, which ends up being 40 years, we spent the whole time south of Israel, and then east of Israel, and then come in via Jericho. But here we suddenly are somewhere at some point in time, evidently towards the end of the travels, we're suddenly in the Negev. What are we doing there? But Yidda Yisrael neder l'Adonai v'yomar. So Am Yisrael takes a neder. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean the leader took the neder? Why doesn't it say Moshe did it? Unclear. But there's some sort of a group neder that they take, which is, Im naton titen et ha'am hazeh biyadi, parenthetically, and totally within parentheses. But if you look at nedarim in Tanakh, there are five famous nedarim in Tanakh. right? And every one of them seems to use this double phrasing. Most famous neder probably is Chana's neder. Im ra'otir eba oni amita amatecha. Okay? But so the same thing here. Im naton titena ta'ama ze biyadi. The one that actually violates that seems to be Yaakov's, where he doesn't use the double phrasing, the participle.
What is Yiftach? Is that a neder?
What? Yiftach is also a neder, and Yiftach also uses it. Yes. As they see, use the same phrase in Naton Titen. Etama zebi adiva chramti et arehem. So they make a deal with God. If you let me beat these people, which means I'll get the captives back, I will v'hacharamti et arehem. What is v'hacharim? V'hacharim means to destroy, but to dedicate. And therefore it becomes cherem. And what's the most famous cherem city in the world? Is Yericho, where Yoshua uttered the oath, the imprecation that anybody who builds Yericho, his children will die, and that it's all cherem, and Achan takes from the cherem, and that's why they can't move forward until they get rid of Achan and get rid of the cherem, etc. All right, parenthetically, the word cherem, which is something that's dedicated to God, it's used all through the end of Sefer Vayikra, the last chapter of Vayikra, Charamim. A cherem, therefore, translates also into that which belongs uniquely to the king, which in Arabic is haram, which, of course, where the English word harem comes from. It's all the same word. So now, Am Yisrael makes a deal. What's the deal? Is that when, if you allow us to win this war, we will ha charam tiyat arehem, as opposed to what? Like, what else would we do?
Allow us to win or help us to win?
Help us to win. Help us to win. All right? But what else would we do? Of course we'd destroy their cities. The answer is we would destroy their cities and then we would move in and we would take the stuff and we would use it for ourselves. But what's the deal we're making? If you allow us to win, or you help us to win, thanks. If you help us to win, then we will destroy the cities and dedicate them to you, meaning they'll stay untouched. So okay? Special status of Kherim.
Just be destroyed?
What? Yeah.
Destroyed.
Which means that we'll get our captives back. Right. And we'll save them. We will not then make these cities for something for use for our own benefit, but they'll just be destroyed cities. Okay? Now, Vayishma Adonai b'kol Yisrael. Famous line, how do you know God listens to the radio? Okay. God listens to the kol Yisrael. Vayiten et ha-Kanani, vayacharem etem v'tarehem. So he gives over the Kanani, which is a way of saying God helps us beat them, and vayacharem etem v'tarehem. And Vayacharem here, Master in Israel, Israel destroys them and their cities. Vayikrashem hamakom chorma. Now, the language of this pasuk itself is a little bit stilted, because it's arehem, which means there are several cities. And what are these cities? These cities sound like they are Arad ubenoteha, benot ha'ir, the banot shel ir, which is a phrase that we find often in Yehoshua, for instance, refers to the suburbs or the outlying the appendages of the city that are under the protection of the city. So it sounds like Arad and its suburbs or exurbs are all captured. It sounds like that. Vayikrashem ha-makom chorma, which means
the whole area.
The whole area, then, instead of Hamakomot, so it sounds like the whole area now gets blanketed under the title Chorma, and it's untouched, and we don't deal with it at all. And by the way, we don't hear about this place later on in history, except in one instance, which is actually going to shed a lot of light on this. In other words, you would think that if this really were on the West Bank, we would hear later on that when Yehuda conquers its territory and gets Arad, that it stays away from this. It puts a little, you know, yellow tape up, you know, police line, caution, don't cross. Don't inherit, you can't touch it. We don't hear about it in that context, but we do hear about it in a different context, which creates a lot of problems for this pasuk. So part of the problem is, when did this happen? Why did this happen? And then that leads also to the big question of where did this happen, which has a lot of impact on how we look at Parshat Chukat. So we'll start with Rashi. Rashi picks up on the famous Midrash in the Gemara, which is the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, and because the Parsha starts with Vayishma HaKna'ani. Now, what is it that the Kanani heard that caused him to go to war? Simple pshat is he heard that Bnei Yisrael are coming. It says, Vayishma Yisrael, ki Vayisrael. Vayishma Kanani, ki Vayisrael. He heard that they're coming. So it becomes some sort of either a war of opportunity that they're on the move, or a war of defense because they're coming in my direction. That's what he heard. Rashi, quoting the Midrash, says, Mashmua Shema Uva, Shema Shemei Taharon. Now, where's that coming from? The previous parsha in Chukat is the death of Aharon. Now, there's a famous midrashic development that there were three great gifts that accompanied Bnei Yisrael in the desert. Each one of them was the merit of one of the three members of the family. The Miriam was the source of the Be'er, the rolling well, which is why in our parsha, when Miriam dies, we immediately hear about a thirst crisis. Moshe is the man, which becomes a little bit problematic for something we're actually going to see at the end of the year today. And Aharon is Anane HaKavod. Now, where do we get that Aharon is Anane HaKavod? So Miriam and the Be'er, we could get from this juxtaposition and all of the associations of Miriam with water, meaning Miriam saves Moshe from the water, and Miriam, her most famous moment is singing at the sea. Moshe and the man, you could sort of see the connection, perhaps, but Aharon and HaKavod is a little bit difficult unless you assume this, which is, the minute Aharon dies, suddenly for the first time we're attacked. For the first time since...
He's the man.
What?
He's the man.
Very good. Thank you, Rasta. But the problem is it's circular. Because if you argue that the only way we know that Aharon was the source of the clouds was because in this pasuk, when the clouds disappear, suddenly we're vulnerable. And when Aharon dies, suddenly we're vulnerable. Well, but who says that they're connected at all? That's assuming facts not in evidence in order to make it happen, sort of a violation of petitio principi. So there's a midrashic notion that the clouds of protection are generated by Aharon. When Aharon dies, the clouds are gone, we're vulnerable, and therefore he comes and attacks. But the critical piece of this is that that means Rashi is putting this story here, meaning Am Yisrael is at Hor HaHar. Hor HaHar is Petra, or thereabouts, on the other side. That's where Aharon supposedly is buried. Aharon dies. And so, what is this king doing? This king is not defending himself. This king is rather coming on the offensive, because everybody in the Middle East knows that Am Yisrael is on their way in, and coming as a preemptive battle, because they saw that the clouds are gone and Am Yisrael suddenly is vulnerable. Okay? All right, that would be the take. The Rashbam and Ibn Ezra and others take a look at the word Ahatarim, which is actually going to help us a lot, but it's going to shift the entire focus of the story away from where Rashi took it. Ha'atarim, the Rashbam points out, we have numerous nouns and also verbs in Hebrew that the first letter is an aleph, where the aleph is a slippery letter that will disappear. So, for instance, you have the word that they all like to quote in Ezroah, which is an expanded version of Zroa. Or the opposite, the one that Ibn Ezra loves to bring, is Lo Yahel Sham Aravi is Lo Ye'ehal, meaning Yahel is a contracted version of Ye'ehal, which is to make a tent. An example of that is something that we learned many years ago here in Shmuel, in the story of Shaul's war against Amalek, is Vayarev Sham Banachal, which means Vaye'erog, meaning he set an ambush. And the first letter is an aleph, the aleph disappears. Aleph, light letter, disappears. So he says, do you know what atarim is? Atarim is simply an expanded version of tarim. What's derech atarim? The route taken by the 12 scouts. Tarim et haaretz. Okay? So now that means suddenly that our story happened when? Our story happened 30 years ago. In other words, he hears that Am Yisrael is coming in this path, and they go to war. And by the way, now, location-wise, it works perfectly, because where do we go? We went past Arad. And suddenly, we hear, but that means that this story is like the story we talked about in Koshesh, and like we talked about Korach, not the Dathan Aviram part, but Korach last week. The story is a story that happened many years earlier. And why is it in Chukat? Maybe it's in Chukat, because Chukat may represent Sefer Melchamot Hashem, which is mentioned in Chukat. And like Ibn Ezra says, it's a book that they kept of all the wars of the Lord, meaning all a record of all of these battles. So here's one of the battles that gets mentioned in here. Now, we yet have a third approach, which is similar, but not exactly the same, and the motivation then becomes different. What happens at the very end of the quote-unquote Meraglim episode? I say quote-unquote because, of course, they're never called Meraglim. But at the end of that episode, the very end, after Moshe tells the decree, the 10 guys have been smitten dead, everybody else heard the decree that they're going to have to wait a whole generation, they're going to die in the desert, the kids are going to come in, etc. What do the vanguard, what do the Lebedik guys do? Say, we're going to go. We're going to go. We feel bad. We're trying to make up for it. We're going to go conquer the land. Right? Moshe says, don't go. Hashem's not with you. And Vayapilu al Tahara, and these are the Mapilim we don't like. Of course, we like the Mapilim from 1946 to 48. But these are the Mapilim we don't like, and they all get wiped out. Parenthetically, take a look at it in source 4. We want to make up for it. And they go, etc., etc. Take a look at the last pasuk. Okay? So, what does that mean? Does it mean that when this group of maverick fighters went in, they got beaten and smashed all the way until destruction, and Chorma is an adjective of force, of sorts? Or does it mean there's a location called Chorma where they get destroyed? So, Yosef Bechor Shor, the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, says that's the story that's happening here. That this story is happening not at the beginning of the quote-unquote Meraglim episode, but after that aftermath. And of course it makes a lot of sense because here you have a whole group of guys who go and they get attacked, and the story is that, oh yeah, but some of them got taken captive, and then Am Yisrael makes a deal, and Am Yisrael comes in, which of course raises the big question. Why don't you tell this whole story there? In other words, at the Mapilim story, say, Mapilim went, they got wiped out, some were taken captive, Am Yisrael made a nether, Am Yisrael was given help by God to beat them, got the captives back, and called the place Chorma. Well, the answer is actually pretty straightforward. Because the Torah is not interested in telling you a total war story. The Torah is interested in teaching you lessons. And the lessons of that piece are, you go to war with God. When you go to war without God, you're not going to war successfully. And therefore the Mapilim lose. This story belongs to a separate piece, even though it's the same, it's another side of the same story, happened at the same time. So that's yet another approach that we have, understanding what this story is. However, there's a problematic pasuk, as I mentioned later on in Tanakh, that many people, and you'll be surprised to see who notes it majestically here, and that is in Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim takes place by and large after the death of Yoshua. There are little bits of Sefer Shoftim that happen at the end of Yoshua's career, and the first chapter and a half of Shoftim is a little bit of a time warp back and forth to the end of Yoshua's career and after Yoshua died. But the beginning of Shoftim is clearly after Yoshua died, because it starts with Vayihi Acharei Mot Yoshua. And in that first chapter is a description of all the land conquered by the tribes, chiefly to point out the land they didn't conquer. It's the dark side of Sefer Yoshua, the part we didn't get. Asher Lohorishit Yoshvei Achlav, and etc. And Ephraim Lohorishit this, and Zvulun Lohorishit Nahalol, and Kitron. All the cities they didn't conquer, Ephraim Lohorishit Gezer. But it starts with Yehuda, and Yehuda, by the way, takes two allies with them. Who are the two allies of Yehuda? Shevet Shimon, who gets land inside of Yehuda, and the Keni. Remember the Keni? Chobab's descendants, who had led up settling in the North Sinai, and then there's a breakaway who moved north, and there's a fellow named Chever, who's a member of the breakaway, whose wife's name is Yael, who's really good with a hammer and tent peg. Okay, that's the Keni. So at the beginning of Shoftim, we hear that Yehuda takes Shimon and the Keni, and they come in as allies. I'll help you conquer, you help me conquer, we'll conquer together. And it's all in the south. Now, watch what happens in passage 5. Vayelch Yudat Shimon Achiv, Vayakuta Knaani Yoshev Tzfat. This is not our Tzfat. Clearly it's in the south. Vayachrim Ota, here we go, Vayikra et Shem Ha'ir Chorma. The name of the city they conquer is Chorma. It's the only other place called Chorma that we know of, besides the one mentioned in
Chukat. Does Vayikra mean they called it, they named it, or does it mean they already had a name
of the city? Typically it means they named it. Sometimes it can be renamed it, like you have that with Beersheba, getting named three times if they're all the same place. Right, Adai Yom HaZeh, the famous thing about Beersheba. You can have the same thing with Gilgal, but here we have no reason to think it's different because Vachrim Wota, Vakrat Shemayir Choma. The problem is, if it had already been destroyed, there's nothing to destroy. So you have to assume that they're the ones who destroyed it, and then they named it Chorma because it was a dedicated city to God. All right? So that raises this very interesting problem. Take a look, starting with the Ibn Ezra.
How do we know it's the same city? Maybe that's just a generic name for dedicated cities.
That would work if we found others. You're right. And certainly Rashi and the Bechor Shor and other Bishonim who read these, this is not being related to our event, are going to read it that way. Yeah. They'll say there's other cities named Korma,
right.
And there's another one of them. Matter of fact, you could even say that in, how do you call it, in Shoftim, they're simply following a model that already existed in Parshat Chukat.
Right.
Absolutely. Take a look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, Amru HaKadmonim Shu Sichon, that the Kanani actually is Sichon. Nikra Kanani, Kikol Amori Kanani, because they're all Kanani. Rabim Amru, look at the Ibn Ezra. Hizota Parsha Yehoshua Katava. Here we go. Now, is the Ibn Ezra, so we're not surprised. Because the Ibn Ezra is the grandfather of the 12 Sukkim at the end of the Torah, not the 8 that is in the Braita, but the 12 Sukkim at the end of the Torah. And the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, and Akhani Azbaret, and Bahar Hashem Yeira'eh, and several other passages here and there that Ibn Ezra was very comfortable saying this was written by Yeshua or somebody later. Right?
How does that help?
What?
How does that help?
Because he'll argue that this story by the way, he's not supporting it. Notice what the Ibn Ezra says. Baharaya Melech Arad Echad. His proof is from the fact that Melech Arad is mentioned in Yehoshua is one of the 31 kings. You know that Baskin Robbins list of Melech Yericho Echad, Melech, right? So Melech Arad Echad. So when was Melech Arad killed? He's killed as part of the Yehoshua war. So what's he doing in Chukat? Who must have been added later by Yehoshua? That's the argument.
So it's a story from the future inside Bamidbar?
What?
It's a story that happens in Yehoshua's time?
That's written into Bamidbar, right. That's what the Ibn Ezra is quoting somebody as saying.
Do we have other instances?
Umatz'u Shibnei Yehuda Karushe Makom Chorma. In other words, these people bring a proof. And by the way, this is the Ibn Ezra. So you shouldn't be that surprised. In other words, if the Ibn Ezra was to adopt this position, you wouldn't be surprised at all. Because the Ibn Ezra comfortably says, although very discreetly and very enigmatically, he won't say it explicitly, but he says, you know, at the beginning of Dvarim, he says, if you understand the story of the last 12 Sukkim, then you'll understand this also. And you look at the last 12 Sukkim, and Perek Lamed Daled Pasuk Aleph of Dvarim, he says, Lefi da'ati mikan ve'elch Yehoshua katab. Not the last 8 when Moshe dies, but the last 12 when Moshe goes to the top of the mountain, because he says, Moshe never came down to give us the rest. And therefore it had to be that Yehoshua wrote it, b'derech nevuah.
Yeah.
And so he quietly throws that approach into all sorts of sporadic passages, not even psukim, phrases that show up in other parts of the Torah, but here he rejects it. And he says, v'lo amru klum. Right? He's rejecting this approach. So he says something akin to what you were saying, which is that this isn't all the same place. But he's not arguing that Chorma might be a generic name given to any place that's destroyed. And by the way, that is true. And this may be what he means, Rabim Bamikra Kamoken, that there are lots of places in there's names of places in Tanakh that are used in multiple places. Right? Beit Lechem, there's 3 of. Gilgal, there's at least 5 of. Ramah, there's at least 3 of. There's also places because they're named based on certain topographical or agricultural things that, and we don't care, that's Beit Lechem Yehuda, Beit Lechem Binyamin, doesn't bother us. Ramat Ephraim, Ramat Binyamin, right? It doesn't bother us. And so he said, therefore, you're right, Chormak, but he doesn't say it that way. He says, look at the words. In Shoftim, they talk about a city called Sfat that they then changed to Chorma. And here, it evidently is something about Arad. But by the way, that means that Ibn Ezra's owning up, that it's the city of Arad that we're talking about, not on the East Bank. Which, of course, brings up that same problem of the location. The Bechor Shor here says where he says that it's the Mapilin in passage 7. I want to show you the Ramban, because the Ramban is just mind-blowing. Because the Ramban. Again, it's, you know, we take the truth from where we find it. That's the Rambam's Hanchaya, we always follow it. If somebody says something that works and fits and is well anchored, then we're ready to examine it seriously. And we're not so concerned with the odd. But when you find a particular author taking a position that runs counter to everything we know about that author, then it's surprising. This is the Ramban. We love the Ramban. Okay, let's take a look at the Ramban. Vanachon be'inat. Hizem melech arad hu yoshev b'negev me'ivel le'odein yama. So this king lives on the west bank in the Arad that we know. Okay, it's not that far from Drom Har Chevron. So his take, though, is that he heard that they were coming, so he crossed to the east bank to go to war, because Ram Yisrael is coming, what we call a preemptive war. That's what the Vayishma is, that he heard from a distance and he came. That's why it says he lives in the Negev to tell you, but he left. Meaning, he lives there, but he came here to fight us because we're on the east bank. Now that means, of course, according to the Ramban and many, the geography of Bnei Yisrael's travels have them skirting the Negev. Not everybody agrees. And many will suggest that we actually went right through the Negev and right near Arad on our way to Moab, and that then we came around. Right? Now, V'nadru Yisrael neder l'Hashem. They took a neder. She'im yitain oto bi'adam she'achrimu kol ha'shalem l'Hashem. What was the neder? That if Hashem helps them win this war, they're going to give everything that they conquer to Hashem. V'sipera katuv. Get ready for this. Ki shama Hashem tefilatam v'nadru neder l'Hashem v'shemu oto. God listened to their prayer, they made a neder, and they fulfilled their neder. Kargu otam atabi me Moshe. They killed him in Moshe's time. Meaning they won the war and they got the captive back in Moshe's time. Kemosh tiva kocher Moshe yachram, etc. V'natnu kostam notza beit Hashem. V'yishlim od b'cham l'saper. But not all that means is that they destroyed their cities. Meaning everything till the end of the pasuk. V'yishlim od b'cham l'saper. Then what does the text add on? Kiachrimu Yisrael gamet arayim achrei boam be'eretz Canaan. After they came into the land, they also destroyed the rest of the cities of the Sarad. Meaning, what happened? Arad came to the east bank. Bnei Yisrael make a neder, Hashem helps, and they win. So they beat them up, and they get their captives back. But they made a neder. What was the neder? If you help me win, what am I going to do? I'm going to destroy their cities. Where are their cities? On the west bank. On the west bank. So he says, therefore the text finishes the story. And what's the end of the story? That they then, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, acharei mot Yehoshua, listen to this, acharei mot Yehoshua, they fulfilled the neder that they had taken two generations ago. They took a neder in Moshe's time. If you help me beat these people up, we will destroy their cities and make them cherem. And when they finally came in, and after Yehoshua died, then Shevet Yehudah was able to conquer, then they fulfilled it. And they call it Arim Chorma. They call the whole area Chorma. And he quotes the whole pasuk in Shoftim. Whoa. What's the Ramban saying? The Ramban is saying simply this. If the pasuk was just telling us what happened in this time, it would have ended four words earlier. Look back at the top thing on the page, the last pasuk. Actually, Vakramatem. Stop there. The minute it's Vet Arehem, Vaikrashim Makom Chorma, that's something that doesn't happen for two more generations. The Ramban says, so the Torah wants to finish the story. Wait a second, the story didn't happen yet. The Torah wants to finish the story, but the story is being told in the past tense and the story didn't happen yet.
Is that like Liz
Bedell? So, no, because that's all happened in the past. Okay, sorry. And then the Ramban says the following. So that's why I quoted Source 9. Source 9, we talked about this in the same point from a different angle a while ago, and that is the story of the man. When does the story of the man take place? So I gave you the first pasuk. When did the whole story of the month start? On the 15th of Iyar, a month after leaving Egypt. Matzah lasted for a month, and then they ran out of matzah, and they got hungry, etc., etc. We all know the story, right? Okay. After the whole thing goes, and this we talked about the Shabbatot, how many Shabbatot there were, and Mamad Har Sinai, etc. After the whole story ends, we're still pre-Matan Torah, we've had a couple Shabbatot, we've had the lesson of the month, and we move on. What happens at the end of the story of the man in B'Shalach? Remember, that's in the middle of Shmot. Take a vial and put one omer of man into the vial, into the jar. Put it in front of God forever. What does in front of God mean?
Didn't we say there's an altar?
What altar?
Those are related to Shabbos that we said.
No? So, maybe that's what we're being Mekayim by having Lecha Mishnah, right. But what's Pshat here? So we find out what Pshat is, and it's mind-blowing, because it says, Kasher tzivah Adonai Moshe v'nechel Aaron lifnei ha'edut l'mishmaret. What does Aaron do to fulfill that? He puts it in front of the edut. What's the edut? The Luchot HaBrit. Where are the Luchot HaBrit? Inside the Aaron. Where's the Aaron? In the Kodesh Kedoshim, of the Mishkan. In Parsha B'Shalach. Ribono Shalom. What are we doing here?
Built it yet.
So the answer, we haven't heard about it yet. There is no Mishkan. There's no Aron. There's no Edut. Edut means testimony. Testimony to what? Matan Torah didn't happen yet. So clearly, these psukim are being written later. Not a problem. Moshe Rabbeinu writes the Torah before he dies, and he tells the story of the man, and at the end of the story of the man, he says, by the way, here's how the man played out. A little while later, we built a Mishkan, and Aron was told by Moshe at that point to put some man there. He did. But that part is fine. The problem is the next pasuk. Uvnei Yisrael achlu et haman 40 shana. How long did Bnei Yisrael eat the man for?
38 and a half years.
No, 40 years is right. 40 years is right, minus a month. Minus a month. But 40 years itself shouldn't exist.
We don't know. Just say, fine.
I'm still no problem. Just like the Mishkan part is written later, the 40 years written. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu is writes the Sefer Torah at the end. He doesn't write at the beginning. Writes the Sefer Torah at the end. So at the end, he writes the Sefer Torah, and in it, he says, hey, let's finish the story of the man. By the way, we ate it, put it in the Mishkan, and we ate it for 40 years. Until when?
Moshe does.
After they crossed the Jordan.
Until after they crossed the Jordan. That's the problem. Right? At the Marachlu, they ate the man until they were already inside of Canaan.
How would Moshe know that?
Exactly. Now, Moshe can know it. I got no problem with Nevuah. What I have a problem with is past tense being written, future being written as past tense. So take a look at the Ramban, where we were in source 8. And he brings this as another example. Vizek inyana parshash amra bereta taman, and he quotes the whole thing, both about the Mishkan and also about the 40 years. And I quote the pasuk in source 10. They ate the man until after the Pesach was brought, a month after Moshe died. Right? So this is a little bit different. Because in Parshat Maaseh, Hashem tells Moshe, the following are the 12 people who are going to work with Elazar and Yeshua to divide up the land. And of course, you know, we haven't gotten there yet. And who says they're all going to be alive? So he says, "Kilo yitachen shi'ah Hashem yachen lemanashim al safek aval ayar roish yitzavel Yeshua beitach haluka." All right, nevuah you chayim yekayimim. So what he says about those 12 is a nevuah that they're going to be alive. But notice which issues he particularly skirts, and I think that he is very, very quietly saying, "I'm signing on with Ibn Ezra here." He skirts the issue of the last pasuk about the man. I mean, not the last, but the second last pasuk, pasuk lamed hey, about the man. Again, the problem with the Mishkan is easy. Moshe Rabbeinu writes the Torah before he dies, and at that point there's been a Mishkan, and the man's been sitting in front of it, and that's all gezunt. But writing the pasuk about having eaten the man until after we crossed, in the past tense, is a problem. What did Rabbi Yehuda famously say about that in the last 8 pasukim of the Torah? Since it says Moshe died in the past tense, so Rabbi Yehuda says, therefore I have to be written by Yeshua. So when the Ibn Ezra here says, and this is also at the end of Dvarim, Mamad Dalet, adds in those two words, B'derach Nevuah, and I believe that that's what the Ramban is hinting to here. Bottom line, you're going to run into Sukkim, and Chukat is like a mother load for this, of Sukkim, that seem to be hinting to stuff that happens later, including stuff that happens perhaps after Moshe dies, like this Chorma problem, and we have the same thing with B'Shalach, which, by the way, interestingly enough, the Man comes up in our Parsha also, is that it seems that underneath, comfortably saying, you know what? Okay, so Yeshua wrote it. I don't know. The bottom line, what is our real concern? What's the bottom line concern? Bottom line concern is this Dvar Hashem. It is Dvar Hashem. And if it's Dvar Hashem, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yeshua ben Nevuah, add these three words in, or these 8 psukim in, or these 12 psukim in, etc., about Moshe's death, or add these words in to show that Bnei Israel fulfilled their neder in your day with Chorman, or that the man lasted all the way until they actually came into Canaan and had food to eat after the death of Moshe, Azoy. The concern is not who the scribe is. The concern, who's the author? Author, capital A.